Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Okay, we need to understand what's going on with COVID. I am now completely hysterical when I saw the numbers last night, 1,200 plus new cases in South Africa. Gauteng, 1,000. What is wrong with us? What is wrong with us? Professor Adrian Puren, he's acting executive director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. Calm me down. I'm now completely hysterical.
No, I don't think we should get hysterical in the morning.
Okay, sorry. You're right. Nobody should be hysterical before 8:30. One should keep calm.
Absolutely. After, yes.
After that,
at
we
9:01.
Exactly. Okay. How worried should we be?
I think we should, you know, as always, you know, as we've come out of the so-called third wave or third resurgence, the inevitability of movement, close contact, especially during this particular period, you know, the post-school closures, greater movement of people in terms of travel and so forth, I think is of concern. And so I think those messages that we still need to and try to ensure that people are adhering to the non-pharmaceutical interventions still remains. But as you can imagine, it is very difficult. I think, you know, after almost 2 years of going through this, I think people are obviously looking elsewhere in terms of how can we survive and adapt to the situation. I think the one possibility though, but I think we need to just be cautious though, and this is not to encourage people's behavior, is that we are hoping that, you know, the vaccine will make some contribution to, in terms of serious disease, hospitalizations and so forth. But again, you know, that's very high risk. So I think we still need to try and emphasize that the maintenance of non-pharmaceutical interventions, in particular, the wearing of masks, being outdoors rather than indoors, or good ventilation, these are still really critical components of how we need to manage this. But it's going to be very difficult to do that. And we've seen, obviously, even though there are high vaccination rates in certain countries, the numbers of infections are still fairly high. And in some places in Europe, as you've also noted, some of the hospitals are being overwhelmed as well.
But are they being overwhelmed?
Are warning signals for us, yes.
Right. Yeah. Are they being overwhelmed? Because it gets a bit confusing. It seems to be that they're being overwhelmed by non-vaccinated. Is that your assessment as well? Or is it a mix?
Yes, my assessment, yeah, absolutely. I think the clear figures, I think are from the UK in particular, I think, where you can certainly see the increase in numbers, and there's that disjunction. A clear disjunction between the increase in numbers and the lower levels of hospitalizations. I know that some hospitals in the UK are still thought to be under stress, but at least that makes the difference, I think, yes.
Are these, in your view, do you think we're heading, these are the indications that we're heading into the fourth wave?
These could be certain indications to that. But again, you know, and I know, remember that phrase, it's in our hands.
Still
remains in a way, you know, I know it's a difficult infection to control given the nature of the way in which it is transmitted from person to person through aerosolization droplets. But still, I think the messages that should still come through is get vaccinated. That's key. That's really important to emphasize that. To overcome the vaccine hesitancy or to overcome that inertia, I think is really critical for us to overcome that. And then the non-pharmaceutical interventions, I seem to be droning on about those, but those are important components for us to manage this and try and stave off, you know, what we're seeing in other countries such as Europe and so forth. But I think it may be difficult for us to achieve that. You know, the models have come out, I think it was post my interview with you, again, showing that the waves or the resurgences are expected to be somewhat less than the first and second and third. And that's primarily because there is no circulating variant, currently at least, that has the ability of high transmissibility and immune evasion compared to the Delta variant. Mm. So that's, if you like, the anchor for that. But in terms of the fact that we've had such huge resurgences may mean that we have a certain degree of community immunity or protection plus the vaccines should put us in a reasonable place, but
yeah.
It's always risky.
And certainly for people who are vaccinated, it does hold a very different danger level. Anonymous says, and I just want to ask you about this, says, hi, Howard, we are also hysterical. Please can you ask Professor for help urgently? My daughter is 13 years old. She has juvenile arthritis and Crohn's disease. Her specialist has given us a letter for a second dose. However, we cannot get the vaccine as the site says we can't get it. What is happening with the 12 to 18 year old second dose?
Yes, that's an interesting question. I think that there were certain concerns, if I recall, there were cardiac side effects.
The myocarditis that they spoke about,
That influenced, I think, South Africa's decision in part. But I haven't seen any further updates.
In a conversation, I think earlier this week with Dr. Nicholas Crisp, he mentioned that there was going to be a discussion. There was a meeting about this that they were having earlier this week because those concerns have largely been discounted and it hopefully will happen soon. But we certainly haven't seen any public information yet around it following that up.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, you know, it comes back to the fact that one needs to be aware of the nuances and subtleties again. You know, if people require that second dose for a good reason, then I think it should be applied. You know, this is possibly one instance where one could argue for it, but, you know, if you have other immune dysfunctions as well, then adding a second dose to really enhance responses. It's not asking for a booster.
Absolutely.
It's asking for an enhancement of an immune response. So I think, you know, again, you know, clinicians, those working at vaccine sites possibly need to be aware of the nuances of when, you know, a second dose is required. It's not asking for a booster.
And especially if somebody is coming to them, it's somebody who is allowed a vaccine and they're bringing a letter. It's not an unreasonable thing. It's not somebody asking, as you say, for a booster when those are not yet due.
Yes. So it's that understanding, I think, around, you know, why,
right.
If you are having these particular conditions, you need to be aware of that.
Right.
Are you going to be talking about flu? Because that's the other.
Yes, that's the other thing I wanted to ask you is there are so many people, and we were meant to be talking about flu, but then the numbers just threw me last night. Completely. But let's just talk about flu for a minute. There are apparently lots of different flus going around. Are there different flus going around? And how do people even differentiate?
Yeah, no, I don't think there are different flus going around. Hard to,
I know, I'm a layperson. Bear with me.
So I think we have the in terms of the circulating strains, are the ones that we always see during our flu season, which is generally, I guess, April to August or thereabouts. It's just that over the last 2 years, we've not really had a conventional flu season. We've certainly seen flu in circulation, but I think it's as a result of the out-competition of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, as well as the fact that, you know, we've introduced all those non-pharmaceutical interventions that are really critical for managing flu in the absence of vaccines. We don't really have a great vaccine program for influenza in this country, which is unfortunate, because there are certainly high-risk groups. So I think the relaxation of the non-pharmaceutical interventions, the fact that there is low levels of immunity to influenza virus, has possibly allowed us to see, if you like, a breakthrough and an unseasonal breakthrough of influenza in circulation. So I think people just need to be aware. Again, and in terms of the signs and symptoms, they certainly are shared. So again, there's a possibility that you can then ask for a differential diagnosis, whether this is flu or not. And again, the same behaviors, you know, if you have the signs and symptoms that are suggestive of a respiratory infection, then obviously isolation is important, not making contact. And again, there's non-pharmaceutical interventions that work for SARS-CoV-2, in particular the wearing of masks and social distancing, are the same ones that apply in case of influenza. Especially again, if you're in the high-risk groups, again, there are shared high-risk groups such as cardiac disease, diabetes, pregnancy. These are all shared. If there are vaccines available, please make use of them.
Absolutely.
I think South Africa, we get about 2 million doses and they don't get used. And so it's a similar problem to what we've been seeing with SARS-CoV-2 is the fact that we do not take up what is available and accessible to us in terms of protecting our lives and those around us.
Absolutely, and very, very important that we protect ourselves as much as we can. It is in our hands. Professor Adrian Puren, Acting Executive Director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. It is 8:31.